Hello and welcome to The Student Dose, the podcast by current and recent medical students where we talk about mental health and well-being while studying medicine. Thanks for tuning in and remember to like and subscribe.
How are you studying for your next medical exam? Our sponsor, PassTest, are an extensive online resource and can help you focus your revision effectively to achieve exam success. I signed up during my exams and I found it a fantastic resource. To learn more about PassTest, please click the link in our show notes. Thanks for joining myself, Charlie and Kate for today's episode where we will discuss sexism within medicine. In a recent BMJ article, it was found that 91% of female doctors experience sexism in the workplace. We are also aware that medical students are not immune to this. On today's episode, we're joined by two special guests, Dr. Becky Cox and Dr. Chelsea Jewett, to discuss their campaign, Surviving in Scrubs, and how they are working towards challenging the sexism still experienced by those in clinical practice. Kate, you are going to interview our guests a bit later, but I suppose to start with, that 91% seemed shocking to me, that those numbers are being experienced in healthcare today. What are your thoughts on that?
I know. I think it's when you hear that statistic, you're really shocked by it because it's such a big number. And a lot of people don't realise that it's still happening and it's still such a big thing in healthcare and in the workplace and out of the workplace as well. And it's really upsetting as well. Someone who's about to go into practice soon, I'm in my last year of medical school as we speak, it makes me kind of fearful to go into the workplace which still has this culture of sexism. And I think a lot of people don't realise the ways that sexism affects women in medicine and the ways that it's also formed, as in it's not just kind of outright sexist comments, it's the little kind of microaggressions in between. And there's lots and lots of different examples of this. There's women who feel they're pushed into certain career paths because they think it's appropriate to them because of their gender, i.e. women who feel they can't go into surgery, people who have their pregnancy status and their marital status always brought up by male colleagues. There's sexism from patients as well, people thinking there's a lack of competency there for female clinicians. And I think it's a really, really broad thing. And I'm sure, Claire, you might have experienced this yourself. Have you kind of come across it so far in your medical career?
It's interesting because I was just having a think there about you mentioning being in your sort of final year and coming up to join in that workforce and then that therefore being a concern. For myself, I'm just thinking back to when I graduated from my first degree. I think I was naive at that point to the sort of level of sexism in the general workplace. So taking healthcare and NHS out of the equation, certainly as a young female going into a graduate level employment at that age, 22-ish, I was naive to that. And I got a bit of a shock at the level of sexism just in general that I could kind of see, I could obviously see. So if I could see it, presumably others could also see it, but it was often just nothing was said or nothing was sort of done about it. So I think hearing those numbers, it is off-putting to think about going back to that, because actually as a medical student or as a student on the whole, I'd say, I think we probably are quite protected in the university environment, certainly, because nowadays, especially in medical school, sort of male to female ratio is equal, if not more females or female students. I think that would be my way of thinking.
Yeah, I agree with it being protective there. I think med school is a great place to find your feet because it's a safer space. But it's interesting, the article we bring up there, it focused mainly on female clinicians, female doctors, and it didn't actually include medical students in the statistics. There was a group of medical students from Manchester University who wrote in to say, actually, medical students aren't immune to this. We are still part of this group experiencing sexism. And for the first time, we all started to really think about the ways that we experience it as students. It was the little things that you began to realise, as I said before, the things about speaking about your future planning, what you want to do, finding that you've had these conversations with male colleagues or male supervisors about wanting to go into a certain specialty, which actually they might pull a face and think, oh, there's not many girls in that. And it's the little things that you don't actually realise until you look back and go, actually, as medical clinicians, we do experience this. And it also comes from supervisors not wanting to address you as one of the female students. I've had that a couple of times. You do find that some male colleagues will gravitate naturally towards male students and will address them. I've been in situations where I've not been addressed, even though I'm the one asking the questions. And you find that it's even these little things which you might not piece together form this kind of sexist bubble we have still in medicine. Another thing which I'd love to talk to Charlie about is that comes with sexism is the lack of reporting. A lot of medical students also find that they find it hard to report sexist comments, because they might not be outright sexist comments, like things that are very aggressive, but little things such as someone challenging their career points or not speaking to them or not addressing them if they're female students in the room. And it's a point for Charlie. How do you feel about male students addressing this problem? Do you find that whistleblowing is easy, or do you find it's quite a difficult thing to do when you hear this on the wards or hear this in practice?
Yeah, I think whistleblowing, there's a general culture of trying to be as open, as honest as we can. We know that's the kind of culture we should adopt. It's in all of our mandatory training and it's in all of our standard teaching, but it's much easier said than done. Therefore, it doesn't always happen. Perhaps in the cases of particularly male medical students, and perhaps some female medical students as well, might be a lack of being informed, might not know that something has happened, and they may not be aware that it is happening. And so therefore education, I think, is important as well. And that needs to be prioritized and emphasized, either in, again, in more practical teaching, or perhaps if there are some particularly passionate students about sexism within the workplace in the clinical setting or medical education, that needs to sort of take action. I hope our guests can provide that leadership, both in our episode today and in more widely in their sort of campaign.
Just taking you back there, Kate, because you made a point about medical students sort of experience it as well as clinicians, which I would agree with. I think my initial point, though, was thinking more in contrast with the university environment versus placement. I wonder if you yourself notice any difference here. I imagine there's instances in both, and of course it'll absolutely depend on where you're studying and at what point in your sort of medical career you are. But I wonder, yeah, if you feel like there's any obvious contrast between the university versus placement environment.
Yeah, that is a really good point to bring up. I think it's really interesting when you go on to placement, because you get to speak to real people, real patients. And that's when you might start to experience maybe sexism from that side. Patients may feel that you're not as senior as other medical students. There's been medical students that have been confused as doctors, and doctors confused as medical students just because of their gender. Sometimes you might find this inappropriate comments, you know, about, I've had some medical students have patients comment on how tight their scrubs are, because then obviously they are unisex scrubs. They kind of fit differently on female and male bodies. Also things like inability to recognize that you are a medical student and not an allied health professional, which is not at any point offensive, but just, I think people have this stereotype as maybe in the wider community that they're these older white male gentlemen, and they're not necessarily you, who's small, tiny, blonde, or kind of from a different background. And I think sometimes people in the general public can't quite put two and two together because of this, because of the way that, you know, doctors have been stereotyped. So I think the first time you kind of go on placement, you do begin to pick up these aggressions from patients, necessarily people who you've kind of been in close with in university, and your simulated patients who are trained to interact with medical students every single day. So that is a very strange kind of feeling, and it can be quite, you know, disheartening when you realize people might not be listening to you or think that you're a completely different speciality or a completely different job just because you're a woman.
Yeah, that's interesting to hear, because I have myself been on placement, but not like big block placements that you yourself have done. You know, I'm still quite early on in my training, so it tends to be much more sort of smaller chunks. So it's interesting to hear from your perspective. I guess just being at medical school as a female on a medical course brings about some challenges or like differences as well. So I'm thinking more of the clinical skills teaching environment, and obviously a lot of the time we practice on each other, and the nature of that is sort of, you know, taking your top off so you can do a cardio exam or what have you. And I just think in general, and it would be wrong to say for everyone, but in general that is much more challenging or involves much more consideration and thought from female students than it potentially does from our male colleagues. And I do wonder how much thought is put into that from a university perspective when arranging these sessions. You know, it might be that you have a male staff member, and you know, these are normally clinical people, they're usually doctors, and it isn't something that feels sort of intimidating or forced upon us. But I think just the nature of how as a female you're brought up, that can kind of be a bit of a challenge. I don't know if you have anything to add.
No, absolutely. Also at Manchester, we're so lucky to have a massive diverse medical student community. We all come from different backgrounds and people have different religious backgrounds as well. So you find there are a lot of females in medical school who also struggle because of modesty coverings. And so when you're doing clinical examination on each other, having an environment facilitator where you can be with other female students because you want to maintain modesty because it's part of your religion. Also a lot of our students who wear hijab as well. It's just being very mindful of these adjustments which are needed. So I agree with you. I think it can be difficult when you're put into mixed gender groups and you're having to perform quite intimate things with each other, especially when you've got kind of a religious background, which would mean this is even more difficult. We also have a number of female medical students from BAME backgrounds who find that a lot of their cultural identity is through their hairstyles. So a lot of my female friends have very long braided hair. And at the moment, where there's a big difficulty, we're just trying to source things that can help them stay in the clinical environment, but also protect their cultural identity. So they find that scrub caps don't fit them and there's no large sizes to help with this. So there's lots of things that I think women experience, which are just inhibited with other bits of medical school, such as being in groups where you want to be around other women because of your religious background and it's better for your modesty preferences. And also things like hair, having long hair that is part of your cultural identity, long braids that you can't even fit in a scrub cap, all these little things that are allied with being a woman and being a woman in medicine and the things you experience every single day. It is different compared to when you go onto hospital placement. It's a kind of different kind of experience, but you still find that even early on you're picking up things which can make it slightly more difficult because you are a woman.
Yeah, agreed. And even things like what's appropriate to wear in clinical practices, I suppose, sometimes that can be quite difficult to navigate. And that, should you wear a skirt, is it inappropriate if people can see your knees? Is that something that like we should be thinking about? And when I think about that in any other career, wearing a skirt like that isn't inappropriate, but actually it just seems like a bit different in medicine and something we think about a bit more. I wonder, in terms of your teaching experience, Charlie, and also as a male, if you have anything to sort of add to that in terms of being in the clinical skills environment with female colleagues or being a facilitator of sessions such like that. Is there anything that can be sort of done to make things easier?
Well, in my experience, most of the students at the University of Manchester, where I was teaching, used to wear the University of Manchester scrubs. So that immediately eliminated that aspect of it. But what I can say is that everything that we've spoken about can be applied to patients as well. So when I was in GP, for example, I was a F2 in a place that was very ethnically diverse, religiously diverse. And there were patients who, when they found out that I was going to be their doctor for the appointment, they had, say, an abdominal problem, the abdominal exam. They didn't want to take the hoodie or whatever they had off, making the examination more difficult. And these are the things that you have to come across as a doctor, as a medical student, and they apply not only to the work that we do, but the people we work with at the same time. And the more we can learn about it, then hopefully the better we can be as junior doctors. In addition to which, you can think about the aspects of sexism that affect healthcare as well. Perhaps the biggest of which being domestic violence, you know, watching out for signs of that. And not that that is something that will necessarily crop up amongst your colleagues or something that you should get involved with necessarily because it's a professional relationship. Nevertheless, learning about these things in the more broad context, in the people you work with alongside the people that you are seeking to serve and treat, will hopefully make us all better clinicians, more well-rounded and more aware of the things that we need to be aware of.
I think just finally then, from my perspective as somebody more junior to yourselves, in terms of my training, do you think that medical school and your training throughout kind of prepared you to approach these topics, or do you think there's more that could be done?
I think there's always more to be done. In terms, there's always opportunities to call it out and to help with bystander training, which helps people come forward. Because I think a lot of girls may feel they actually don't want to go forward because they're worried it actually might disrupt their relationship with certain people. I know I've been in situations where maybe an odd comment's been said to me, but out of fear of it disrupting my relationship with my supervisor, I would have never said anything. So we just need to make sure our channels are better for disclosure. Also, in terms of preparation, I think the hardest thing is when you're so proud of what you do, and then when you go out to the real world and people fail to kind of recognize it because of your gender and because it's not what they typically think of as a doctor, that can be very disheartening. So I think you just have to make sure that you really keep your chin up, and if anybody says anything which really kind of distracts from this, it's not, you know, taking away from your capabilities. But I think med schools are starting to be a lot more proficient about bystander training and about making sure people bring up comments. And they are especially, well, I have to say, Manchester's been very brilliant at creating these channels for students who experience these problems. But we've always got a long way to go. And as you said before, there's more women practicing and more women who are entering med school more than ever in the UK. And I just hope that all the people that are in medical school can support this change, and kind of we can work towards eliminating any sort of sexist culture that we already have in the NHS.
Charlie, did you have anything to add just there?
Well, actually, related to, did you learn about some of these things that we're going to be talking about later on in med school? I'd say a lot of the education I've had personally has probably actually come through education I've had outside of medical school, through listening to things and listening to other people, and rather than informal medical school / doctor training. Part of the reason for that is not necessarily that med schools don't try, it's that perhaps it's the wrong way, because doing it in lectures in that takes an hour or a whole morning or a whole afternoon is not, as we all know, the most effective way of delivering information in all contexts. Instead, there are other ways of doing it. And I think external methods have been more effective for me, as it has been, I think, for other people as well. I think also hearing about it from people that we know who've experienced it is often quite effective. And so hopefully highlighting it in the campaign that our guests are going to highlight in their episode today will enlighten more people and provide a better education.
Brilliant. In that case, without further ado, let's pass over to Kate, and she will take on the interview with Dr. Becky Cox and Dr. Chelsea Jewett.
So, guys, thank you so much for joining us for the podcast today. If you'd like to introduce yourself, we've got Dr. Chelsea Jewett here.
My name's Chelsea Jewett. I'm an ST3 in emergency medicine working up in the Merseyside region. I'm currently on maternity leave, however, and I am one of the co-founders of Surviving in Scrubs, which is a campaign which predominantly highlights the pandemic of sexual misogyny within the healthcare workforce. So we primarily campaign, raise awareness for that, but we're also trying to implement policy changes as well as reporting systems that are psychologically safe for victims of these issues.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you.
So I'm Dr. Becky Cox. I'm one of the two co-founders of the campaign Surviving in Scrubs. For my sins, I am a GP, but I'm also a doctor working in gynaecology and secondary care. Alongside that, I also do academic research, particularly with a focus on violence against women.
And we just want to start by asking, what influenced you to start this campaign?
Yeah, sure. So kind of stemmed from the work that I did with the BMA back in, when did that start? 2018, 2019? And then what resulted in the BMA Sexism in Medicine report survey, which was published in about August 21. That, just as a brief overview, that report, it was a survey that went out and was replied to by 2,500 doctors, predominantly female. About 2,000 of them were women and 500 were men. But it came out with quite a lot of shocking but not surprising statistics. So 91% of women in female medics at that point had experienced sexism within the 2 years prior. About a third had had unwanted physical misconduct, and about two thirds unwanted verbal conduct as well. So off the back of that, Becky got in touch with me. We'd never met before. And then I suppose the one of the few good things that came out of COVID is that you could virtually meet people so much easier. So she got in contact with me and we started speaking on Zoom, and we just realized that we had a real passion for this, in that we wanted to push further than what that survey showed. So that survey was focusing on doctors, and we're aware that this isn't just a doctor problem, it's a whole of healthcare issue. And we just thought, what could we do? And so we finally met in person, and over a bottle of wine in a semi-dodgy pub in Birmingham, we decided to come up with Surviving in Scrubs. The core of our work and our campaign is our website, where anyone who works within healthcare, so it doesn't matter what role you are, whether you're a student, be medical, nursing, physio, or you know, you're a consultant in something, you can anonymously submit to us your experiences of sexual misconduct in the workplace. And we've got quite a lot of themes through that, but we've got sexism, examples of misogyny, and then unfortunately harassment, assault, and even rape in the workplace as well, all on our website. So we've been going for just over a year, and we have 160 testimonies, 160 stories. Those submissions aren't necessarily individual stories. Some people have given us multiple examples, but through that collective narrative, Becky and I have been able to worm our way into quite a few impressive rooms, to be honest. So we've been in rooms with the GMC, Royal Colleges, NHS England, NHS Scotland. And, you know, there's a real thirst and determination through a lot of these organisations to prove that there's an issue. And there's a great big evidence drive coming. A lot of numbers are coming out, but they don't have that power that we have with our website, that human story. And that's what we're doing. We're just advocating for these survivors of these behaviours, of these assaults in some cases. And yeah, that's where we're up to, really.
I guess essentially we're a campaign that advocates for survivors who work in healthcare of sexism, sexual harassment and sexual assault. The whole reason that we set up the campaign was to give a voice to those people, because so often they're not heard. They're too scared to speak up. If they do, they're not listened to. Any sort of complaints that get made get quashed. So we wanted to ensure that there was a safe place where that voice could be heard. And we hoped when we first did it that together we would be able to amplify those voices. And you know, given so many stories that we've had now, it really feels like we're getting to that stage. But in essence, we want to stop this behaviour, but we want to do that through giving power to survivors.
Amazing. Thank you so much for sharing. And I'm led to believe as well, the campaign got quite a bit of international press.
International, I'm not 100% sure about, to be honest. I know it was definitely national. I should have said our first kind of like campaign, as it were, was we wrote to the GMC because they're rewriting their good medical practice guidelines. I'm sure many of you listeners know, but it's basically a code of conduct for doctors. And the 2013 version only has something along the lines of you will respect your colleagues. So it's so vague that it's pointless. There's absolutely no point in having that clause in there. So what we want, and we still want this, is we want an explicit clause that says that, as horrible it is, that you have to spell this out for doctors, medical professionals, but it is, we want something in there that says you will not sexually harass or assault your colleague. And we just want it in plain language like that. So we wrote an open letter to them, and that was picked up by Guardian, Times, even the Daily Mail, who were surprisingly positive, though admittedly they had to turn their comments off on their online article. And then we ended up going on to Women's Hour and things as well. So it's all kind of taken off from there, yeah. And every so often we crop up on a website or on a newspaper or on the radio or even on the telly once or twice as well. So it's all very exciting and interesting, but a little bit out of our comfort zone.
I think we're all glad that the press has been predominantly positive as you're making steps to make people's stories heard. I know as well, both of you are interested in consultancy bystander training. Could you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so we've started off as purely a campaign, but as we've got this momentum behind us and we've got, you know, we're having more and more conversations, we're not only highlighting the issues, but we are trying to solve the problems. Our end goal is basically to work our way out of a job. So we want surviving in scrubs to be an obsolete phenomenon because we want there to be no sexual misconduct in the workplace. So what we've done over the past few weeks is we've now launched ourselves as offering consultancy to governing bodies, NHS trusts, Royal Colleges, etc., to try and really solve these issues. And that's in the form of safe workplace policies, because unfortunately, many trusts don't have them, but also education for staff members as well. For example, active bystander training, because so many people don't know what to do if either someone comes and raises a formal complaint with them because the systems aren't transparent, or just from on that human level, they don't know what to do if they witness or see something. And it's something that we're really passionate about providing and educating people about, because it can make a real huge difference in the long term.
I think it's really interesting you brought up the bystander training, because I was going to ask you, do you think this is something that we need in medical schools a lot more, to have proper bystander training from the start so people can really recognise if someone experiences microaggressions or bigger kind of macroaggressions in placement or, you know, throughout med school?
Yeah, I should also say we're very open to working with universities and medical schools as well. And it's not only active bystander training that I think needs to be taught in medical school. I think just awareness of behaviours such as sexism, misogyny, etc. Because microaggressions can be very subtle and a lot of people aren't aware of what these things are. And I think in an ideal world, people would be learning this before they even got to medical school. They'd be learning how to interact as decent human beings without undermining people based on protected characteristics as children and young adults. But when they come to university, and particularly if you're going to be in a public facing space, so medicine, nursing, physio, you know, anything healthcare related, then you should be made aware of what is and isn't acceptable conduct. Our area is obviously that interprofessional space, but it does also link into kind of patient care as well. So that's something that we would love to see in some medical schools. And then adding on to that, the active bystander training, what to do, etc. But just to add, there's also, in terms of the protection of the actual students themselves, going into clinical placement is quite a minefield as well, because they're meant to be looked after not only by the university, but by the trust that they're under. So even that can make kind of reporting and that kind of thing even more tricky and kind of muddies things for them as well.
I definitely agree there. As someone who is coming to the last year of medical school now, I'm unfortunately in the group of people that have experienced these sort of things and in the workplace on placement and even throughout med school before clinical placement. How do you think a lot of girls or people, female identifying people, feel when they experience these sexism comments in the workplace?
So I can speak from my own experience. Me and Becky are both survivors of these behaviours in the workplace. It can be a whole range of emotions. I personally have had incidences where I've been humiliated, and then off the back of that, I've either been very upset or I've been very angry. It's really difficult to then channel that into a proper reporting system where you feel as though you have justice for that experience that you've had. It's definitely what spurred me on to keep doing this, definitely. But there's also fear, scared, intimidation, shame is something that we're hearing a lot about. A lot of victims are blaming themselves, because something that adds into that is if they are to report. And we know that consultants and people higher up in the medical hierarchy are protected by their organisation. So if you are lower down the food chain, as it were, and people then aren't listening to you or taking you seriously, then you think, well, why am I kicking up a fuss? Is it me that's the problem? We've had reports on our website and through people just reaching out to us individually and emailing us, etc., telling us how they've been, you know, extremely anxious, they've been depressed even. Several people have said how they've either changed specialty, moved hospitals, or just left the profession completely. It can be absolutely devastating for people. Becky and I read every single testimony, every single story that comes onto our website, and it can be absolutely heartbreaking just to read these stories of these bright, you know, usually young but not always professional, determined people having to then reevaluate what should be a safe space. Your workplace should be safe. Having to then get to the point where you want to leave that profession, it's just heartbreaking.
Absolutely. And another very important thing was the impact this can have on people's mental health to experience this in the workplace. How have you found this has affected people's mental health?
In numerous ways. As you can imagine, it certainly affects people's well-being, but we've had people reporting diagnosis of anxiety, depression, PTSD, affecting their sort of longer term other mental health conditions as well and exacerbating those. People have said, I've quit my job because of it. I've had to take time off, go on long-term sick leave because of the experience. So yeah, it has a huge impact on mental health, and I don't think that's really taken into account when we think about things like burnout and other mental health issues amongst clinical professionals. We don't tend to ask about, have you had any traumatic experiences?
Absolutely. And we were discussing with Chelsea before about you both read the submissions personally. How does that affect your mental health? Because it must be quite challenging to read those submissions.
Yeah, it is. And I think you get good days and bad days with it. So some of the days, because of my own personal experience, you read the story and you think, oh my goodness, this has happened to someone else. It's almost exactly the same thing. But then other days, like when we had a huge amount of stories coming through, I uploaded 15 in one day and realised that I had reached my limit with that. I just felt utterly sort of bereft at what I'd read, and it was horrendous. So we have to really protect ourselves with this. And we certainly, you know, if we've got a story that's come through that's particularly traumatic, we quite often discuss it between the two of us.
And in terms of the submissions, do you have a plan to use them in any projects at all?
So going forwards, we're going to be compiling a report of the stories that have come through. So our plan is to do a narrative analysis of them so that we can pick out themes that are recurring amongst the stories. And our plan is, in early autumn to publish that report. So all the stories will remain anonymous, but what we want to do is use them to create a bigger picture to illustrate what's happening.
Brilliant. I'm very excited to read it. I'm sure it'll be a very hard read, but something that I think a lot of people should definitely have the chance to read. And guys, just for the both of you, really, we discussed before about medical school and how we can involve our medical students to stand up for those who experience sexism. In medical school, did you both experience any sexism at all?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mainly when it came to people trying to steer you into a certain specialty. At the time, I did actually want to be a GP for many reasons. I changed my mind, but it was definitely assumed that as a female medical student, that's where I'd end up. And there was lots of conversations about my plans to have children, whether I had any plans or not. There was a lot of interest in my personal life in terms of, did I have a partner? I remember when I was a medical student, one of the junior doctors asked me if I was engaged. And then when I said no, asked me what was wrong with me. So there's a lot of subtlety. Well, that's not even that subtle, but well-meaning sexism is what I'm going to take it at the face value. But then also there was quite a lot of not so nice stuff, and there was definitely inappropriate comments and, unfortunately, on several occasions, inappropriate touching, as well as a medical student on placement, which is very scary, actually, because the power dynamic between a consultant and a medical student is quite vast. I didn't speak up about it for multiple reasons at the time. And again, that's just another thing that kind of fuels the fire that I have to try and get something sorted.
Absolutely. I think that phrase you use there, well-meaning sexism, is very poignant, because I think that's what a lot of people think is a lot of the time, pushing you into a certain specialty because they think it's good for you because of your gender. Becky, is there anything that you can really add to that at all?
Yeah, I guess there is actually a term for well-meaning sexism. It's called benevolent sexism. So it's sort of saying, oh, you're such a nice lady doctor, go and do this. Yeah, absolutely. As Chelsea said, I experienced it. I am now a GP. Not that I necessarily followed what other people's advice, but certainly I wanted to be a surgeon when I was in medical school and as a junior doctor, and got actively discouraged from doing that. Sort of saying, what about if you want to have kids? What if you want to get married? I got told at one point, it's a very manly profession, therefore you shouldn't do it, and women shouldn't do surgery, I was definitely told. So yeah, it was everywhere. And you know, in medical school, exactly as Chelsea said, it was inappropriate jokes, lad banter, which just got brushed off. And it was, if you think about it now, some of the comments were really, really vile, inappropriate jokes about your sex life and what you get up to in your spare time and stuff. It's awful. And certainly well aware, being on placement, of the consultant you shouldn't spend time alone with, the one who is known to be a bit pervy on the ward round and would look all the female medical students up and down a bit too much. Yeah, it's endemic.
Yeah, man, it's something that I think a lot of people listening to this will unfortunately relate to. For both of you, I'd really like, what is your plan for the future with the campaign? Is there anything that you've got coming up which is exciting?
Shall I say? Actually, tomorrow, probably one of the more exciting things is that we're actually going to Westminster. So we're going to meet Caroline Noakes tomorrow, one of the MPs, to talk about our campaign. Over the next few months, our plan is to push the campaign more into the political sphere. So we need to get that buy-in from our health secretary, who so far has not replied to any of our letters. We want to ensure that this becomes an issue where the NHS and other healthcare organisations are held to account. And we need to see that our politicians are buying into that as well, and thinking about this as a bigger issue rather than it just being something that sits in our little bubble. And certainly we are continuing to push for an independent inquiry into this issue, because we feel the evidence needs to be heard across organisations. And we're also, you know, continuing to campaign for changes in policy and advocate for survivors as well.
That is really exciting. I'm very excited for both of you. I think, going back, we've discussed, because we are primarily a mental health podcast, we've discussed a bit about how sexism can impact mental health. Do you think this is one of the reasons why medical students actually statistically have a higher rate of mental health problems compared to a lot of the other population, as well as doctors?
I think it's definitely a contributing factor. I'm not a mental health specialist myself, but being around a lot of medics, there's definitely certain personality types. And I think maybe that kind of type A perfectionism, etc., when you're then faced with something that is out of your control, such as being the victim of these behaviours, that can be very traumatising. It can be very triggering. I don't know about the literature on it, but I wouldn't be surprised if it wasn't contributing, definitely.
Yeah, and it would be so interesting to find that out. For our listeners who may be doctors, medical students, people who haven't started yet, what advice would you give to our female and our female identifying listeners who have experienced this?
I think just to say that you're not alone. It's, you know, completely understandable to worry either about these behaviours happening in the future or to have had these experiences already. And just to say that there is a community of us out there. And it always used to be that nobody ever spoke about these issues. And that still is the case. There's still a massive taboo about this issue. And so we just really encourage you to reach out, to find your group and to find fellow survivors, because they will be out there and they will be amongst your friends. And the best thing you can do is to talk about it and share how you're feeling, and you will find support.
It's a very, very important note. And what I'd like to do now is just open the floor a bit to Charlie and Claire, who are the other co-hosts, who've been nodding and listening along, and I can see very much enjoying the talk so far. Is there anything that you guys would like to specifically ask to our lovely guest today?
Yes, Kate, I have been waiting for my chance to unmute my mic. Thank you so much for speaking to us. So I am a postgrad on an undergrad course, and so much of that resonated. Like, for example, when I got into study medicine, a lot of people forgot the congratulations and started with, oh, does this mean you're not going to have kids anymore, or have you decided against a family? And I was just shocked at that, to be honest, after, you know, all the hard work and effort it takes to get to this point. So yeah, it's actually really helpful to hear that from other people as well. I guess coming from our perspective, just with our focus on mental health as a trio, how do you protect your mental health as campaigners and organizers and medical professionals? It seems you do it all, you know. You're saying you're off on maternity leave as well, Chelsea. So I suppose all of that comes with quite significant emotional burden, just being the face of a campaign, for example.
If I'm totally honest, I don't look after myself very well. If I'm totally, totally honest, it's a learning curve, particularly at the moment. Now I am on maternity leave and therefore chronically sleep deprived. But Becky and I are a team, and I think we make a really good team, to be honest. We talk about things, even though we live on opposite ends of the country, we probably see each other more than we see our own husbands who we live with. So we have that support network in each other. I'm trying really hard to do all the self-care kind of stuff, but I can't do what I used to do pre-baby. So things just like prioritizing what's important, not only in terms of the campaign, career, etc., but having time away from it, which I think is very important for both of us, given how we can be reading so many testimonies, so many emails, and it's a hard and triggering topic quite a lot of the time. So yeah, that's what I do anyway. Oh, and I run. I run a lot and I walk the dog a lot.
Yeah, I would just follow from what Chelsea said. Actually, we absolutely look after each other, and we do speak almost every day. So geography has no bound on what we're up to. But yeah, we do, you know, if we've got a difficult decision, we run it past the other one. If we've got a difficult story, again, we talk to each other. We generally can pick up when the other one is flagging a little bit. And certainly, you know, Chelsea's covered me if I'm just feeling a bit exhausted from everything, and vice versa. And definitely campaign burnout is a real thing. It really is. The like number of emails and all that kind of stuff does build up. But I think the main thing is to know that we're actually doing something positive for change, and that keeps us going. And alongside looking out for each other, it's recognizing when we're struggling, when we need to take a break, when we need to go for a walk or have a dog cuddle, all of that sort of stuff is so important.
I think we feel you on the sort of geography side of things, given this whole Scotland, Manchester, London divide going on here. So yeah, it's definitely possible, isn't it? I mean, that's why we have this podcast. The looking after yourself, the well-being aspect is something we all have to work on. And I think quite often for healthcare professionals, it comes after many of the other things on the list. So if nothing else, hopefully it kind of draws people's attention to needing to do just that little thing for themselves. But I just need to ask, so myself and Kate were chatting about this just before we began, and the one thing that we both get quite a lot is we'll introduce ourselves as the medical student, or we'll tell somebody that we're studying medicine, and they proceed to refer to us as the nurse throughout. And now, it's not that we have an issue with the title of nurse, because we both said that nurses are doing, you know, fantastic work, work that we don't think we could possibly do. But it's just that bias that people presume that that's the position that we take up, or that's the space that we hold. Do you have anything you'd like to sort of contribute to that?
Yeah, definitely. We've all been there, all been called nurse, being referred to as the receptionist at work repeatedly. And also you just get that your title just gets taken away from you quite a lot as well. Like, I'm perfectly happy with patients using my first name as long as I've introduced myself as that. But sometimes you do, they know it annoys you if they just take away your doctor title, the thing that you've earned. So yeah, really, really, really feel you with that. And it's really hard sometimes to challenge it and say, actually, no, I'm not a nurse. Actually, this is my job. I think most of us have been there at some point.
I think from all of us, massive disclaimer, absolutely. I don't think I have the stamina to do nursing. I think they are incredible people. It's not being called a nurse which offends me. It's just the lack of recognition for the title, which is the worst bit, really. But yeah, thank you guys for that. And again, Charlie, just to throw the baton to you, really, is there anything that you, any burning questions you'd like to ask?
Yeah. Main one being, what do you guys recommend for any of the male medical students, male doctors? What can we do to help with the campaign and more widely?
I'd say do the fundamentals well. And by that, I mean, listen to people and talk about this issue. Becky and I are both female doctors. Our campaign is predominantly focused around female medical professionals, female healthcare workers, or people that identify as female. However, we are aware that this isn't a purely female issue, though it predominantly is. So even just kind of listening to people, trying to identify with the emotions and the stress and all the issues that are around it, but then also talking not only to survivors but to other men, because not all the time, but most of the time, it is men that are perpetrating these issues. And even just having that dialogue, that conversation, you're not going to change people's attitudes overnight. We'd love it if we could, because it'd make our life very easy. But just like having constant dialogue, constant conversations, you can eventually change someone's perception of what an issue is, rather than just having kind of a, I'm not listening, this is my opinion. And then that leads to kind of more of a conflict and nothing really gets resolved. So that would be my advice, really.
Yeah, I think, again, like, just listening is so, so important. So if you have a friend that you know is struggling with this, offer that listening ear. If you hear comments going on when you're studying or on placement, if you can, call it out, if you feel okay to do that. And, you know, even if it's just sort of conversations with your friends and just talking about, you know, what you feel comfortable with, what we should, you know, should all be doing to challenge sort of discussions and the way that women get dismissed and all of those sorts of things. It's just about making sure it's something that you all feel really, really comfortable talking about, and know that, you know, if you've got a mate who, you know, is a bit dodgy and tends to say this kind of stuff, call them out on it. Even if you do it in a jokey way, just make sure that they know what they've said is unacceptable.
Thank you so much, guys. I think on that note, I'm very happy to end it on the point of just having that conversation, calling it out. You know, don't shut up about it, because it's such an important issue. And we're so lucky to have Dr. Cox and Dr. Dewitt to come and speak to us about their campaign. Again, thank you so much. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast. And if anybody would like to find out more information about Surviving in Scrubs, they have a wonderful website and you can have a look at the campaign and learn more about our lovely speakers. But again, thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of The Student Dose. If you'd like to hear more, remember to like and subscribe. You can also find regular updates on the UOK Doc social media channels, and don't forget to check out the show notes as well.